Why is it that today the world has such a bad view of the church?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Friends, there is a reason that I have been saying in recent weeks that there is a demonizing of the police force and that we must be careful, and that leaders, from athletes to political leaders to others, need to send out a message of respect and honor for the police while we look at real issues of injustice and abuse. Tragically, over the weekend, this has been underscored, especially all those in New York, but the whole nation reeling over the execution-style murder, the assassination of two policemen in New York over the weekend. Michael Brown here. Welcome to The Line of Fire. In a few minutes, we are going to encourage you and challenge you. I'll be speaking with best-selling author Philip Yancey about his book, Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News. And certainly the world needs good news today, and the church is the one to bring the good news. And Philip Yancey has words of encouragement and examples for us that will help us go out and be world changers and make a difference and be ambassadors of grace. But before I bring Philip on the air, I just want to take a couple of minutes and share my heart. Can I do so openly? When I'm done with my interview with Mr. Yancey, I'll be able to take some calls. So you may want to get in the queue now, 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. All of you who have been listening to the broadcast for years now know that I am always willing to tackle controversial issues, always willing to tread into dangerous waters, open up conversations where potentially everybody could get offended, but so that we can learn from each other. And I have been saying for years that there are reasons that so many Black Americans mistrust the justice system, that there are reasons that so many have negative attitudes towards the police force, that this is not just imagined, that there are too many raw and open wounds that must be addressed. And I have been an advocate for that. I have addressed that for years in many, many different settings, on the air and in writing. At the same time, I've always sought to bring balance to discussion and raise larger issues that we should all be concerned with as well. And in addition to that, I have said, and people said, no, you're wrong. I have said that the protests in recent months over the killing of my namesake, Michael Brown and Eric Garner, that the protests have also sent out a wrong message that has demonized the police in general and has created hostility towards the police in general. And many of you have told me, no, you're wrong, Mike. It's not the case. It's only the bad cops who are being demonized. That's not true. It's not true. I don't know why this isn't apparent to others, but it is clear that when you send out one message and one message only, and when you send it out with the ferocity and intensity with which it has been sent out, that although you have many well-meaning protesters who are peaceful and peace-loving and who advocate nonviolent solutions to the many problems we face as a nation, tragically, the messages come in such a way that a little over a week ago, some protesters marching in New York were chanting, "What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want it? Now." They got their wish. I've been sounding the alarm for a reason, friends, and asking athletes to send out a message of solidarity with the police, along with solidarity with victims of injustice. Now you understand why. May God use these tragic events to awaken us to do what is right and to listen to each other and learn from each other and help bring healing to our broken land. We come back. Philip Yancey will talk to us about vanishing grace. You don't want to miss this.
want, for fire we please.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Whoa, I just went to our website, and there's a special offer. Wow, I didn't even realize this. You can get 25% off of anything you order on our website for the next, I think it's 2 weeks if you use the code HOLIDAY25. Wow. So go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right on the homepage. Look at that. Maybe I'll order some stuff. Well, stuff. Okay. I'm holding in my hands a new book by Philip Yancey, a best-selling author. I and so many of you have appreciated his writing over the years. It's called Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News? And when I got the book and started looking at the endorsements, I was kind of stunned. But the first endorsement that occurs is from Bono, lead singer of U2. Wow. And then Max Lucado, pastor and author and others. Philip Yancey has a lot to say to us. It's my joy, Philip, to welcome you to the Line of Fire.
Thank you very much, Michael.
Really, I was stunned by the range of endorsements, but you obviously hit a nerve here. So, Philip, what prompted you to write this book?
I've been listening to your program, Michael, and I think we're all aware there's a definite lack of grace in America today. And what struck me was surveys by the Barna Group. You probably know about them. They're based in California.
Sure.
And they detected a dramatic drop in how outsiders to the faith, these are unbelievers, how outsiders to the faith perceived Christians. In about 1996, not that long ago, 85% of them still had a favorable impression of Christians. But just 15 years later, you ask the young millennial generation, only 16% have a favorable impression. So somehow, the reputation of Christians has taken a dramatic plunge. And I wanted to find out why. When I don't know the answer to a question, I tend to write a book about it because it gives me a chance to explore, to investigate, to go to some people who can help. And in this case, to find out what we are doing that so turns people off. We're obviously not asked by Jesus to run a popularity contest, but we are asked to present the good news, living water that a thirsty world needs. And if we're not doing that in a way that they perceive it as good news, we're doing something wrong.
You said that you've asked strangers and casual acquaintances, why do Christians stir up such negative feelings? So let me play the devil's advocate here. What if we're warning people about sin, we're warning people about divine judgment, we're calling them to repentance, we're standing against sin in the society, wouldn't they then have a negative attitude towards us? So what kind of responses did you get? And maybe it's just people don't like the message of repentance.
That may be part of it, but I go back to the example of Jesus, Michael. I wrote this book, The Jesus I Never Knew, and when I was writing that book, I made an actual graph of all the people who encountered Jesus. And the funny thing is that the more sinful, social outcast, disreputable a person was, the more attracted they were to Jesus, whereas the more kind of pious and middle class and even godly, like the Pharisees, the person was, the more threatened they were by Jesus. And it seems like we in the church have kind of turned things upside down so that the truly needy people don't think right away, oh, I think I'll go to church, they can help me. But they did think, I think I'll go to Jesus, I know he can help me. So I'm trying to figure that out. What is it we're doing that is turning away the truly needy? Jesus said, I came for the sinners, I came for the sick, not for the well, for the sinners, not for the righteous. And somehow we in the church are coming across more like the Pharisees, judgmental, hypocritical, you know, we look down on them, we have our act together, they don't. And that's not Jesus' style.
Right. It absolutely isn't Jesus' style, and there's a reason that the sinners thronged around him and the religious establishment had a problem with him. And I always ask myself, how do I know that I'm not part of the religious establishment? I mean, it's something that we all have to examine because no one thinks that they are. Everyone thinks their group is the good group, and we're preaching the pure word. You give examples rather than writing a book about what's wrong with the church and just pointing out the problems. You give examples of what you call grace dispensers, and you put them in three categories: pilgrims, activists, and artists. Who are the pilgrims, the activists, and the artists? What does that mean?
We're all pilgrims. And by that, I just mean that we should convey that we're not some kind of superior class of human beings. We've got the same problems, the same temptations, sometimes the same failures as the people around us. The difference is, just like in Pilgrim's Progress, we know the destination. We know where we're going, and we believe mm-hmm. we've been given some important clues on how to reach it. And that's a stance that the world is more open to than, I've got the answer, and you don't. So the recovery movement, you know, AA, Alcoholics Anonymous, they've taught the power of coming together based on weakness and vulnerability rather than, here's the answer, I'm the doctor, you're the patient. We don't respond very well to that when you get into behavior issues. But if you come across as a fellow pilgrim on the journey, I know what it's like. I understand. I mean, that is the message of the incarnation, isn't it? Jesus taking on flesh, knowing yeah. all of our temptations, as Hebrew says. And yet, we're not alone. We know the destination. That's pilgrim. Activists, they are people who are on the front lines. I borrow a line from Miroslav Volf, the theologian who taught at Fuller, and he's now at Yale Divinity School. And he said, in the old right. days, you could very effectively talk head-to-head so that Billy Graham, for example, could rent the biggest stadium in town, fill it with people, stand up and say, the Bible says, and they respond, oh, well, it must be true. You try that now, and people will say, well, so what? I don't believe the Bible. And a more effective technique in an increasingly post-Christian society, hostile society, is first to demonstrate with your hands, reaching out with your hands, acts of mercy. That touches people's heart. Why are you doing this? Why are you rebuilding this house that I lost in a hurricane? And then they're open to that head message, hand to heart to head. The artist, mm-hmm. I mentioned artists because historically artists find a different way to communicate, a more powerful way. It hits our emotions. It gets around defenses that people have built up. We're not all able to be artists, but it's an example of grace dispensers that are effectively communicating the faith in a culture that's drifting away from it.
All right. Before we look at some specific examples there, Philip, here's a quandary that many Christians today face. I got involved a little over 10 years ago. I started getting burdened for what was happening in society with gay activism and what was happening in schools, what was happening with redefining of marriage, the threat to freedom of speech, religion, and conscience. God began to deeply burden me for the societal issues, but then gave me a tremendous burden for individuals, mm-hmm. for God's love for individuals, for rejection that they had suffered through the years, for the perception that the church was pushing them away. And the philosophy I've operated by over these years now is reach out and resist, reach out to the people with compassion, resist the agenda with courage. However, when standing against an agenda, in other words, saying, hey, we don't want to redefine marriage in our state, we believe it's important to keep marriages male, female, etc., that the moment you stand for an issue, you're very quickly going to be looked at as a hater and a bigot and be presented a certain way. So do you give any guidance for how we can be people of moral conviction and yet at the same time lay our lives down for a dying world with the compassion of Jesus?
Well, you're right. That's a huge quandary. But we're not the first people who face that. I'm thinking back to Martin Luther King Jr. He stood for principles mm-hmm. of justice, but he said, we fight with different weapons. We fight with the weapons of grace. So that when a policeman throws me in jail, hits me on the head, I don't hit him back. I don't hate him. I try to love him. I pray for him like Jesus told me to do. And eventually, that kind of message got through in a way that the violence would not have gotten through to the white conscience. And he said, my goal right. is to create a brotherhood. My goal isn't just to keep white people from lynching black people or discriminating against them. My goal is to have us love each other. And, of course, he's speaking as a Christian minister. And include in the book very briefly an example that you probably know about, and it comes out of the original Jane Roe versus Wade, which is a similar issue. It's a societal change that has happened in our lifetime. She was the one whose case before the Supreme Court legalized abortion kind of across the board. Well, that mm-hmm. woman was working for Planned Parenthood, and Operation Rescue moved into the same building, a little bit in your face, and they would follow her around and yell, baby killer, and, say bad things about her. But a couple of people on the Operation Rescue staff decided on a different approach. They started going out to the parking lot.
Let me jump in right there. We've got a break. In fact, that's a colleague of mine that you're speaking of. Amazing story. Stay tuned to hear the rest of the story, the book Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News, by best-selling author Philip Yancey.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You've probably read one or more of these books, Disappointment with God, What's So Amazing About Grace, Where is God When It Hurts, Jesus I Never Knew. I'm just looking at the list of books by Philip Yancey and realizing all the ones I've used over the years, Skeptic's Guide to Faith. His newest book, published by Zondervan, Vanishing Grace, Whatever Happened to the Good News. It's a word of encouragement to the church to be bearers of good news and hope to a dying world, and to change the world's perception of the gospel and of Jesus, because the world will identify Jesus with us for better or for worse. Philip, right before the break, you were talking about the woman that would have been known as Jane Roe, Norma McCovey, who was the one that was used for the Roe v. Wade court case, which, of course, was based on falsehood and so on. And here she's now a proponent, years back, proponent of the abortion movement in the same building, working with Planned Parenthood as Operation Rescue, a strong pro-life movement, very aggressive pro-life movement. What happened to her?
She became a Christian. The director of Operation Rescue started hanging out with her in the parking lot during her smoking breaks. And then the daughter, I forget how old she was, something like 9 years old, the daughter of one of the employees also kind of adopted her, invited her to church, and the change began. And eventually the director apologized for calling her names, and he tried the new approach, amazingly, love. And you asked about the gay issue particularly. There's a similar situation in Grand Rapids. Ed Dobson, whose fundamentalist credentials were unsurpassed. He had worked as the vice president for Jerry Falwell's Moral Majority Group, and then he went and founded a church in Grand Rapids. A little bit later, he got Lou Gehrig's disease, ALS, so he had to resign. But he went to the gay community in Grand Rapids, and he said, it bothers me how the church has treated you. We want to help. What can we do to help in the midst of this AIDS crisis? And at first, they were very suspicious of him, but eventually he won them over, and they responded not by changing their beliefs about same-sex marriage, but rather by serving, by loving. And that's one thing that we can do. It's not just a matter of doctrine. It's a matter of style. In fact, Michael, I look at what Jesus did. He never compromised on the ideals. He pushed them higher and higher. Okay, you haven't murdered. Have you ever gotten angry? You haven't committed adultery? Have you ever lusted? And yet he held out that safety net of grace so low that nobody can fall beneath it. Peter was basically the same as Judas, denying Jesus. Saul was a persecutor of Christians, a human rights abuser. And yet these are the giants of the church. And a lot of churches do exactly the opposite. Some will accommodate the message. They'll move it down. They'll lower those ideals. And some will raise the barrier of grace. Oh, we don't really want that kind of person in our church. They make us uncomfortable, especially our donors. And I'm just calling the church to go back to Jesus' style, not to accommodate the message, but to show that style of love that cuts through those divisions. Grace is the force that does that.
Do you think, Philip, that sometimes we're afraid to do it because there's a certain risk involved when you demonstrate biblical grace and mercy?
Oh, there's a great risk, isn't there? And but that's a risk that God took. My goodness. You go back and read Romans 6, 7, and 8, and Paul keeps asking that question. Well, what if people sin so that grace will abound? And he doesn't really have a good answer. He just says, God forbid, you've misunderstood the whole thing. But the risk that God took in forgiving the likes of us is a risk that we can abuse that grace, and people do. But if you go to the mature epistles that Paul wrote to mature churches, he said, once you understand the wonders of God's grace, don't you want to live in a worthy way of that? And that's the positive approach that I think our church needs, not so much scolding, but inspiring us to live in a worthy way in view of the grace that God has already shown us.
Yeah, and it is an extraordinary stretch that God made when he reached out to me. I was a heroin-shooting, LSD-using, hippie, rock drummer, Jewish, 16-year-old that went to a church to pull people out, and that's when I experienced God's love. By the way, a few years ago, we had a gay protest outside of our church, and we were told by police folks were coming, so I got on the air and said, please don't come in small numbers. We really want to welcome you. We had a greeting committee when they came. We invited them into the service, which they declined. But we had folks with refreshments and so on. And after about 15 minutes, they left and said, you guys are too nice to deserve a protest. And the organizer called me the next day on the air to publicly apologize for the protest and said that they met with the perfect love of God when they showed up.
I said, listen, I
don't feel you need to apologize because you had convictions or were acting on them. I said, of course, I forgive you. But the question is, how do we live in the same city as neighbors in the midst of our differences, which led to us having an extended dinner together? And that's as far as that went. But at least it is saying that you can hold to convictions and demonstrate genuine love. But it's a challenge we need to hear, Philip. And do you believe that there is still room to turn the tide with this generation? Is it a lost cause right now, or can we rise up and really demonstrate to society who Jesus is?
I do take heart with the younger generation particularly, because they begin with style. They begin with grace and reaching out to the neglected. If you go on Christian college campuses, the one issue that most lights their fire is sexual trafficking and
yeah,
slavery. You know, it's the least of these, to use Jesus' phrase. And they start with that loving concern for those in deep need. And frankly, a lot of them are pretty squishy on the doctrine, you know.
Yes.
But they start with that style. And Jesus and Paul and Peter, all three of them, at one point said, you can pretty well summarize the law into two things: love God and love your neighbor as yourself. And if you start there, you can get a lot of things wrong, but love covers a multitude of sins, as the Bible says.
Yeah, absolutely. And Philip, what's so great about the book is the inspirational examples, the positive examples, because it's got to touch a chord in the hearts of believers. This is the first time we've ever chatted, but I've been so blessed by your writing over the years. Just wanted to thank you personally and appreciate you taking time at this busy time of the year to join us on the air. Thanks so much.
Well, it's my pleasure, and you're right. I didn't want to write a scolding book. I wanted to write a book that taught me how, by looking at examples of people who show grace. That is the message of this Christmas season, after all.
Absolutely. Well, God bless you. Thanks again.
Thank you, Michael.
All right, the book Vanishing Grace by Philip Yancey. So glad to have him on the air with us. All right, friends, go to the website, askdrbrown.org. Check out my latest article. It's Time to Stop Demonizing the Police. So much we need to talk about here on The Line of Fire. Tomorrow, we'll do our annual Christmas debate. Should Christians celebrate Christmas, Hanukkah, neither, both, matter of conscience, why one, not the other? We'll talk about those things on the air. And take advantage of this. I'm stunned to see it. 25% discount on any online order, any of our resources, any amount. Go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, right there on the homepage.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, just it's horrific to hear that. That was part of an Al Sharpton-led march that took place a little over a week ago in New York City. Obviously, Al Sharpton was not advocating that chant, but that chant took place there. Horrifically, what do we want, dead cops? When do we want it now? It's part of the demonizing of police nationally that I have been warning about. And I just have a request for you, my dear listeners, 866-34-TRUTH. Don't only listen to me when you agree with me, but when you disagree, give it thought, all right? Not only when I take a position that you think is a right position, but when I take a position that you differ with, give it thought, because I've given it thought, and often I felt burdened by the Lord to do a particular thing. When I urged LeBron James, not knowing that he'd ever see the article, but I just felt prompted to write it, to make a positive pro-police statement. Never said don't show solidarity with what you believe to be victims of injustice. Never said that. In fact, I said I understand why you and other athletes have done that, but please send a pro-police message. Well, tragically, that's what it took. Now, over the weekend, with different sports teams in New York standing with the police, moment of silence. There's a reason, friends, I've been saying these things. And I just appeal to you, just as I constantly listen to you and learn from you and constantly listen carefully when you differ with me on things or when you tell me I'm missing something, I just ask you to do the same. Those who say, no, cops in general weren't being demonized, they were. They have been. I'm going to talk about that more a little bit later in the broadcast. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll stay on the subject of grace for a moment. Well, I was going to Boston. Let's go to Lake Station, Michigan. Cy, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hello, Dr. Brown.
Hey, Cy. Good, good. How old are you, Cy?
I'm 17.
17. All right. Awesome. What's on your mind, sir?
You were talking about grace and the subject of whether it's a lost cause. I heard whether it's a lost cause with the last generation, like if it's worth, you know what I mean, with that.
Yep, yep.
And the one thing that I noticed my generation with, I started a prayer meeting at my school, and the one thing I noticed about my generation is that they hear people say, oh, the millennial generation is going nowhere. So then that's one lie I have to get out of their minds, because then it's like they're stuck in this, I can't get out. I can't get out of this addiction. I can't get out of this lifestyle because, you know, I'm too lost anyway. And that's one of the lies that I've had to help people and minister people through. So that was just what I was calling in to discuss.
Yeah, oh, Cy, I appreciate it. I absolutely have great hope for a generational turning, a cultural turning. I live with that deep expectation every day of my life. Let me ask this, and we may have to continue this conversation right on the other side of the break. So tell you what, let me put my question out to you. You can think about it, and then we'll come back and keep talking on the other side of the break, all right? But here's my question. I found with many in the younger generation an identification with those who are hurting, an identification with victims. Philip Yancey mentioned victims of sex trafficking and things like that. Wanting to side with those that seem to be pushed out by society, which is very, very commendable. At the same time, I found that there isn't a larger view of what makes society work. So, for example, many young people will say, look, Billy's a nice kid. He gets bullied at school just because he's gay. Why shouldn't Billy be able to marry Bobby? So they're siding with the kid who's a victim of bullying. But now they're saying, well, we need to redefine the fundamental institution without looking at what that means. How do we work this through? We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Just looking at breaking news, Joe Cocker, dead at 70 of cancer. If you're from my generation, you would have remembered him with some of his songs, With a Little Help from My Friends and You Are So Beautiful. And just a few weeks back, Jack Bruce, the bass player with Cream, died. Sometimes when you have a number of leaders from the same generation dying, there is a message with it. Moses, Aaron, and Miriam in the reverse order. First Miriam, then Aaron, then Moses all died right before Israel goes into the promised land, the end of one generation, beginning of another. Something I'll give prayerful reflection to. 866-34-TRUTH. So back to Lake Station, Michigan, Cy. The question that I've struggled with in reaching out to a younger generation is how to affirm the right part of their attitude while getting them to look at the larger issue. The micro attitude they have might be good in terms of caring for an individual who's rejected. The macro attitude, the larger narrative they often miss. What are your thoughts on that, Cy?
Well, first, you know, you are absolutely great at this, as by what I've seen, because you have truly influenced me in all these things as a younger generation. But the one way to do it for me is to show that we also have been in the darkness before we have seen the love of Christ. We have also been there. And when we show the love, and then, but when we let them know, when we open our hearts, you know, I was that way. I mean, me personally, I actually do struggle with same-sex attraction, but yet I found the hope and the love of Jesus Christ and showed that that testimony matters too, just like the one who's getting bullied, their testimony also matters. And so when we do that, we can say, yes, it's very good. This person should not be treated that way. And yet Jesus, you know, he died on a cross so we could be sanctified and made holy and made pure. So, like, I just noticed that's one thing is, if we back down and change our fundamental position on these issues, they will see it as hypocrisy, even though we won't admit it because we're stubborn also.
Got it. Yeah, then that's an excellent point you make, though, that on the one hand, we're constantly being told we're bigoted, we're small-minded, we're this and we're that. And yet you're saying that if we change our standards, I mean, God forbid we even think of that, but if we change our standards, then we'll be perceived as being hypocritical by those who are attacking us for being bigoted. Aside, when you mention personal testimony, there's one really important aspect. Personal testimony is always important. We see it emphasized throughout Scripture. But the younger generation, maybe more than many generations before, are much more influenced by a story, a narrative, than by statistics. Now, on the one hand, it's always been like that. You can talk about 6 million Jews who died in the Holocaust, or you can tell the story of Anne Frank, and when you tell her story, you get more attention and more tears and empathy. But do you find that giving statistics and facts and information almost goes in one ear and out the other ear with many young people because they're not thinking through the issues critically?
I would say not, from my experience with that, because we like structure also. We enjoy structure, but we find structure in the false places. I mean, we would rather, it all really comes back down to our own personal, you know, if I support them, then really I can accept my sin, and then I can live in my sin. So if I agree with these statistics, then that would maybe mean that I have to change how I'm living. So that's pretty much
right. So ultimately, there's still the bottom line of human beings being human beings, and I'd rather go to the doctor who tells me everything's fine than the doctor who tells me I've got to change my lifestyle. One last question for you, Cy. Were you raised in a home with your mom and dad together?
Actually, no, I wasn't.
Got it. All right. Obviously, that's very common with your generation. What percentage of your friends would you say come from I don't need any details in terms of your own background, but in terms of your friends, what percentage would you say come from broken homes one way or another?
Come from broken homes, all about 80%.
Yeah, that's
70 to 80%.
Yeah, that's staggering.
Yeah, it's really
sad. Staggering. And that has to be, when you talk about the need for structure, so the instability of a broken home, kids raised in the midst of divorce, being shuffled back and forth between parents, some kids never even knowing who a father might be. Ultimately, behind the rebellion that we commonly find in younger generation in every cycle, but behind that, there's often a crying need for mothers and fathers. Do you think that if people really get involved with young people as moms and dads and care for them, that they can impact kids in that way?
Oh, of course. The one thing that we need is to be discipled by someone in the older generation, because that's what's missing. I believe that's what's missing, is a lot of times a lack of discipleship from the older, the younger generations, and mentorship. I mean, with me being from a broken home, it wouldn't have been the same as if I didn't have men who took me and made me their fathers, and also, you know, a heavenly father who ravished his heart on me. So, I mean, without that mentorship and discipleship, we're on a road to destruction. We need that stability of one man, one woman, a father figure and a motherly figure.
Yep.
Who loves and cares. And without that, it's useless.
That is the foundation of life and society, and what God set up is set up like that for a reason. And where individual families lack, that's where the church has to be the church and provide a loving structure for discipleship and growth and stability. Hey, Cy, thanks for calling in and sharing good word with us. Hey, were there any of my materials that you had your eye on getting recently but haven't been able to, a book or DVD or anything that you had been looking at?
Yeah, actually.
What's that?
Authentic Fire, actually.
All right. Well, tell you what, Cy, stay right there. And Betsy is going to get your mailing address, and I want to send you a signed copy of Authentic Fire. So happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, and a blessed New Year to you. Thanks so much for the call. 866-342. Stay right there, and Betsy will get your address. All right, let's go to Laurel. All right, I was going to Laurel, Maryland to talk to Billy, who was holding, but looks like we got cut off. If we can reconnect, we will. 866-34-TRUTH. This is the great challenge for us. As Philip Yancey articulated it, and as young Cy, 17-year-old Cy, articulated it, this is the great challenge for us. To follow the example of Jesus, to hold the standard of God high. In fact, naturally speaking, impossibly high. Naturally speaking, something that no human being can possibly live out or carry out. And yet, at the same time, to offer grace to the worst of sinners, to offer grace to the most distant person, the most hostile person, it's a challenge to me, because on the one hand, I don't mean it's a philosophical challenge. Philosophically, there's no challenge to me whatsoever about that. Yeah, you hold the standard high and you offer grace freely. That's simple philosophically. But when you are known for holding a standard high, you're not normally known for offering free grace. When you're known for offering free grace, you're not often known for holding the standard high. For example, we have a prophetic role in the society. And so in that regard, we stand for life. That means we stand against the killing of unborn babies. We stand against abortion. We become known for that. We tend not to be known for our mercy and compassion for the struggling mom in the midst of an agonizing decision. We're often not known for being part of an adoption movement to care for babies that these women do have but are unable to or unwilling to care for themselves. And for me, on the front lines of issues having to do with gay activism, I'm called day and night a bigot. I'm called, you'd be amazed what I'm called on a regular basis, mocked for it, vilified for it, standing against gay activism. Whereas my heart goes out deeply to those who identify as LGBT, and I want them to know wholeness in Jesus. I want them to know the love of God, and I've often told congregations, get ready for people coming into your midst, people coming into your service. They're going to be very different, living differently. Are we willing to reach out to them, go have meals with them, show them the love of God? It's a challenge to live it out, but it's what we're called to by the grace of God. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Either this week or beginning of next, before the end of the year, I want to share a lot of what's happened over the year, a lot of the good things that have taken place, a lot of the amazing things that have taken place that you've been part of as you've prayed for us, as you've joined us on the air, as you have contributed and helped us with our work. So I want to give you some encouragement, some firsthand updates on a number of things so you know we're not just raising our voices, but by God's grace, making a difference, and our voices are being heard. We'll have some new resource offers for you in the new year, one of which is on my desk. Just can't talk about it yet, but I'm really excited about when I got into the office after being overseas, came in and saw it. I was thrilled. Actually, I was beyond impressed, to be honest with you. And I finished a book, sent it to the publisher a couple weeks back. Should be out somewhere in the middle of next year. And it's principles to live by that will help us outlast the gay revolution. Principles to live by, not just what's wrong in the society, but principles for us to live by. 866-34-TRUTH. I will be devoting much of the next hour to talking about this issue of demonizing the police. I know many of you will not be getting this next hour live on radio, but if you don't, just go to the website, Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and you can just click on the banner to continue listening live, driving in your phone. No, we don't have a cell phone yet that converts into a car, or a car that converts into a cell phone. Driving in your car, you can listen on your cell phone, or at home, your computer or your tablet. You can catch the broadcast anytime later today. So we'll be focusing on that, talking about that. I just want to read one thing to you, though, that I was really blessed by. Oh, let me see where this is. Yeah, this was Jimmy. I may read this in the second hour as well. Dr. Brown, I'm a retired NYPD sergeant who served the city from 1984 to 2004. The NYPD dramatically cut crime from a level of homicides from about 2,300 in 1990 to less than 500 last year. So 2,300 a year in 1990 to less than 500 last year. This takes active policing. When you have active policing, sometimes things don't always go as planned. The police around the country have millions and millions of interactions every year. Yes, with that many interactions, you will have some things go wrong. That does not mean that there is a police brutality problem across the country or in New York City. I have myself used restraint and personally witnessed great restraint by many officers. There is a demonic movement across this country which is targeting police. At a rally in New York City the other day, the protesters were chanting, "What do we want, dead cops, when we want them now?" He said, "I feel bad for the citizens of New York City because the police will slow down and crime will go way up. We will go back to the days of lawlessness in New York City. You reap what you sow." And his comment posted on my Facebook page got lots and lots of likes. So, again, I'm just appealing to my dear listeners to hear me out. I know many, perhaps the vast majority, have been sympathetic to what I've said and have recognized the rightness of what I've said. And remember, I'm not trying to win anybody's favor. I'm not trying to win a certain segment of the audience over. I'm not trying to convince people of a particular position because you are black or white or Hispanic or Asian or Native American or Gentile or Jewish or male or female. I'm not trying to plan and plot. I'm trying to speak the truth in love. I'm trying to be sensitive to issues and speak truthfully, even if it means offending everybody or offending no one. My goal is not to get on radio and say volatile, explosive things to offend people, nor is my goal to get on radio and say things that are so nebulous that no one ever gets offended. My goal is to speak constructive truth. There are some who are upset with me for saying, look, there are issues of injustice faced by black Americans and other minorities. It's a fact. It's an undeniable fact, and it's been verified by many of you have called in to tell your own stories. And it's also an undeniable fact that in the recent protests, the tone of the protests, the widespread nature of the protests, the lack of qualifying statements in the protests, that there has been a demonizing of police in general as if police were the bad guys. And that, you know, look, there are T-shirts people wearing and signs they're holding up saying Black Lives Matter. Well, some have been holding up signs saying Blue Lives, meaning police wearing blue. Blue Lives Matter. And when you have a general attitude that is cultivated, that is hostile towards authority, that's not from above. Let me repeat that. When you have a general attitude that is being cultivated, that is hostile towards authority, rather than respectful towards authority, that is not from above. That is fleshly or that is demonic. I will gladly disobey the authorities if they are telling me to disobey God. In other words, I'm a person under authority because I love and honor authority. If the lower authority tells me to disobey the higher authority, with all respect, I say, I'm sorry, but I must obey the higher authority. But I don't trash the lower authority because that authority has been put in place as an authority by God. Now, if they act abusively in that role, if they sin, they're all the more accountable to God. And I will do what God says rather than what people say. Nonetheless, the fact is, we are submitted to authority. We love and honor and respect authority. The atmosphere is such in New York that there are reports of people who were clapping and laughing after these policemen were shot down in cold blood, leaving behind two widows and, with one of the men, two orphaned children who grew up without their dad. And as the young man, 13-year-old Daniel Ramos, son of the murdered Hispanic officer, as he said, everyone says they hate cops, but they are the people that they call for help. To his dad, I will always love you and I will never forget you. R.I.P. Dad. I've been sounding the alarm for a reason. And if I'm saying things and you're differing, I'm just asking you to step back. I've got a decent track record about warning and sharing concerns. So I just urge you to step back and hear the concerns. And if you haven't read my article, It's Time to Stop Demonizing Police, please do read it. AskDrBrown.org. Read the latest article. Also, when you're on the site, terrific offer. I'm thrilled and surprised to see it. Take advantage of it, friends. 25% off all online orders, period, until January 4th while supplies last. That's right on the website. Use the code HOLIDAY25 when you order, and our joy to be a year-end blessing to you. My bottom line today, Jesus came full of grace and truth. That is the example we must follow, holding high the standard of God, laying down our lives for a dying world. Friends, there's a reason I've been warning about the demonizing of police in recent weeks.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Boy, the voice of Marty Goetz singing, O Come, Emmanuel. Michael Brown, welcome to The Line of Fire. Boy, it's great to be back home. I got in traveling back from Singapore Friday night, I guess about 28 hours of travel, time differential of 13 hours, but had a restful weekend. Normally I come back and it's immediately getting on the run, but had a restful weekend. So did some writing and, but just got to rest a lot, spend some time with Nancy, chill and catch up on sleep. It was a joy. It was a joy to get refreshed, but I've been eager to get back on the air with you. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Look, when I had been sharing my concerns that the protests that were taking place in different parts of America were having the effect of demonizing the police, when I appealed publicly to athletes, whether they'd hear my voice or not, didn't know, but felt to do it, to send out a pro-police message, along with their message of solidarity with those they perceive to be victims of injustice. Not either or, but both and. Many said, well, it's not my place to do that, or police are not being demonized, or it's only the bad ones being demonized. Well, that simply was not true. It simply was not true. And in point of fact, the sentiment, the rising anti-police sentiment has been getting uglier and uglier and uglier. Look, just a little over a week ago, Joey, clip number 5, I want you to hear what New York City protesters were chanting as they marched. This was an Al Sharpton-sponsored march. Obviously, he did not endorse this message, but there was a chant, not just by two or three people, at this protest. Listen to what they were chanting. Were you able to make out those words? It's just sickening to hear. What do we want? Dead cops. When do we want it? Now. And as many have said, exactly 1 week later, they got their wish with two cops killed in cold blood as they sat in their vehicle doing anti-terrorism training, working overtime, killed in cold blood. You say, yeah, well, that was just an individual killer. I understand that, but that individual killer has also been provoked by the sentiments of the hour. Would he have done what he did anyway? God knows. But I do know that the sentiments of the hour have increased hostility towards police. Look, I wrote December 15th. I wrote this. Quote, more and more policemen are fearing for their lives as they go about enforcing the law and doing their jobs, as protesters have even thrown rocks and explosives at them. Explosives. I talked about what happened in Denver. There were four cops riding bicycles. There was a high school protest regarding injustice against blacks in America, etc. There was a high school protest. A car hit the four cops, one of them critically injured, and the kids were chanting, hit him again, hit him again. We must address this issue of the demonizing of police. There's a reason that there were some New Yorkers laughing when these cops were killed, saying they deserve it. We'll be right back.
God of light, hear our cry. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Thanks for joining us on The Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Yeah, during the break, sorry, Joey, I didn't communicate clearly. We'll have these clips ready to play. I want you to hear what New York City Mayor Rudy Giuliani, former Mayor Rudy Giuliani, had to say about these issues. There's a lot of hostility right now towards the mayor of New York City. Policemen turned their backs on him as he walked into the news conference after the killing of the two Brooklyn police officers. Ironically, this is in this case, ironically, they were both minorities as well, Rafael Ramos and Wen Jian Liu. So one Hispanic, the other Asian. The criticism of Mayor de Blasio saying that he has taken an anti-police stance. Listen to what Rudy Giuliani had to say about this on Fox and Friends, clip number 6.
Well, if I was in the situation that Mayor de Blasio is in, and I feel sorry that he's in this situation, I would give a speech to the police department, and I would explain that maybe I was wrong about a few things. Maybe I was wrong about putting too much emphasis on, you know, police misconduct, when in fact police misconduct is a minor part of the problem. Community serious violent crime is a much bigger part of the problem.
All right, so first point he's making is that police are there to fight against the bigger issues. Police are there to fight against the larger issues. And, for example, under Giuliani, the number of homicides went way, 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 way down. Violent crime went way, way, way down. So, yeah, you may have some abuses along the way, and those need to be addressed. Those must be addressed. We've been addressing them. I've addressed them over and over again in writing and on the air. They must be addressed. Absolutely. At the same time, you appreciate what the police are doing and recognize that they are there to enforce the law and to work against the bad guys, and they risk their lives in the process. And when there is a wholesale demonizing of the police in protests, regardless of the color of skin of the protest, the protests have been mixed. It's not just blacks protesting, whites and others have been protesting. I understand that. And there are rightful, peaceful protests to be done. But you must recognize the larger message that is being sent out. Let's continue with Rudy Giuliani, clip number 7.
You know, the people who are saving black lives in the city are you, the New York City Police Department. I'm not doing it. President Obama's not doing it. Mayor de Blasio's not doing it. He's not out at night walking up and down housing developments and trying to save children from being killed. The police officers are doing the most right now in these very, very poor communities, and sometimes they're white communities, but where they're black communities and black communities, the police officers are doing the most to save the children that are at greatest risk. The politicians with this propaganda, separating the community from the police, are doing something that's shameful, and they have to stop doing that. The vast majority of police want to help, and the politicians' rhetoric should reflect the truth, not propaganda.
Exactly. The vast majority of police, I believe, do want to help. Those that are corrupt, those that take the law in their own hands, those that don't subject themselves to the law, those that are part of a corrupt legal system, those who are perpetrators of injustice need to be held fully accountable. Absolutely. And I'll say it again. Black Americans are not just imagining that there is a problem. Black Americans are not just saying that they face issues that white Americans don't. They're not making this up. I don't doubt that. I've written about it. I've addressed it. And many of you calling in have helped articulate that. But let us not be imbalanced with our message and our rhetoric. It is leading to hostility towards police. It is leading to hostility towards authority figures. It is leading to an imbalanced view as if the cops are the bad guys. One more clip from Rudy Giuliani, then I want to go to the phones, 866-34-TRUTH, clip number 8.
This is not the time to call for the resignation of the mayor. It's not the time to say there's blood on his hands. A lot of other police officers were killed under a lot of other mayors. It is the right time to talk about his policies, however. His policies of allowing protests to get out of control, and of his not emphasizing enough the importance of fatherhood, the importance of education, the importance of alternatives to a public education system that are failing the black children. It shouldn't just be me and Charles Barkley who are pointing out these issues.
Ah, again, I agree. As Americans, and I just prefer to look at this as Americans, period, regardless of our background or race, or in particular as followers of Jesus, part of one body, one family, that we need to address these issues together to bring wholeness, to bring healing, to bring transformation, and to always be ready to speak the truth to each other. What concerns me is if I say something you agree with, that you'll say, man, I like what you're saying. I agree with you, Dr. Brown. Mike, keep preaching it. If I say something you differ with, rather than say, okay, maybe there's something to my perspective, it'll just be dismissed. All right? And I'm constantly listening and learning as well as speaking. 866-34-TRUTH. We'll start in Charlotte, North Carolina. Ed, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Yes, I just wanted to ask you, if you would, when the hour is over, would you say that some of these young blacks have been killed in cold blood? I've heard you use that term over and over again concerning the policemen, but I've never heard you use it for any of the young blacks that have been shot down in the street. And then the other thing is I want to say is that none of the protests that I've seen lately has been about a black that was killed committing a serious crime. You see, they're protesting because they're shooting people down in the street for little or no reason whatsoever. Hey, you don't ever confront that. And why don't the policemen speak
out? Well, Ed, hang on. How many times, here's what troubles me, sir. I want to be, you're straight with me, I want to be straight with you. Over and over and over and over again, in writing and on this radio broadcast, I have drawn attention to the injustice faced by many black Americans. I have talked about my shock with the Eric Garner verdict and that there was nothing, not even involuntary manslaughter charge brought against the police, as Charles Krauthammer did. I've constantly drawn attention to these issues. I've constantly raised issues to white Americans about perspective that black Americans have that white Americans don't. And yet it gets thrown out as if I've never said a word. I mean, that's really bizarre to me. When I draw attention to it, maybe more than just about any conservative Christian white radio guy out there. And it's not enough somehow. I mean, I don't get that. I'm asking honestly, Ed, why is all the times I talk about it over and over and devote whole shows to it and write whole articles about it, why isn't that enough?
I've never heard you go over and over again as though there's something different about a policeman dying than it is about a young black guy that was really not committing any crime whatsoever. You know, if you're breaking the law, you're attacking somebody, you're killing somebody, and you die, that's one thing. But for walking down the street or for selling cigarettes, you're supposed to be able to go home. You're not supposed to die for committing a minuscule crime.
We all agree with that. We all agree with that. But when you say for walking down the street, my namesake, Michael Brown, was not shot for walking down the street. Only God knows the facts, okay? But the grand jury that heard all the testimony believed that the officer thought his life was in danger. But put that aside, okay? And with Eric Garner, I don't think the guy should have been choked. I don't think he should have been arrested for selling loose cigarettes. But I have talked about injustice against blacks probably 50 times. For every single time I've talked about a policeman being killed, at least 20 or 30 times more, if not 50 times more. And you're not hearing that. See, that's what grieves me. You're not hearing when I'm talking about the other over and over and over again. And when I one time or two times bring up the other side, then you get upset with me for that and say I'm not being equal or fair. I mean, I don't think you're hearing what I'm saying.
For some reason, you think we listen to you every day, and I don't. You know, I don't listen.
Well,
how many times?
Right. How many times would you say? No, I don't think everyone listens all the time, especially 2 hours. How often would you get to listen? Do you think?
I listen. I get to catch maybe 10 minutes, 15 minutes a week.
All right. So that's the thing that, right. So it's probably best to start. Yeah, we got a break. Probably best to start and saying, I only catch a little. So what I'm saying may not be accurate. So tell you what, read my article. Go to my website, askdrbrown.org. Click on latest article. Read the article, Can a White Man Speak to Black Americans? I'll quote time after time after time after time where I've drawn attention to these issues in such a way that you'd say, that man understands.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
All right, here's some comments that were posted on my Facebook page over the weekend. Anyone that used profanity was ultimately pulled. But after I addressed the issue with the tragic deaths of the two cops in New York City, And again, I have drawn attention to issues concerning injustice towards Black Americans for some time now. 866-34-TRUTH. I have written about these things repeatedly. I have appealed to white Christians to recognize things they may miss because of their own upbringing and background. And I have appealed to Black Christians to grasp them things that they may miss. I reflected on this a lot and gave it prayerful thought with the Trayvon Martin George Zimmerman situation. And I said that it is often a blind spot with white Americans that when racism is there, we don't see it. And then I said it's often a blind spot with Black Americans that when racism is not there, they do see it. And I've had people agree to both. I've had people tell me I was right on one and wrong on the other, you know, right on the one about the other people's blind spots, but not their own, which I found fascinating. Well, I was in Singapore, a black pastor and author with a prominent ministry that I know, wrote to me, "Hey, Dr. Brown, just read your article in Charisma Mag, Who's Killing Blacks?" where I talked about, yes, real problems with police brutality that do exist. Then I talked about black-on-black violence. Most whites are killed by whites. Most blacks are killed by blacks. There's just a much higher percentage of black homicide, which is tragic and disturbing. And then I talked about abortion, which overwhelmingly is the greatest crisis and attack on life in the black community. Here's a black pastor and author. Just read your article in Charisma Mag, Who's Killing Blacks? Great writing, researching, and reading. Just wanted to share and commend you on great kingdom work. This is what I hear consistently from so many friends, both black and white. And yet, when I raise concerns about the larger effect of the protests, that they're having the effect of demonizing police, and it would be good to send out a message of solidarity to police, especially athletes who influence young people. Young people in general often have a negative attitude towards authority. You grow up in a certain environment, you may have even more negative attitude towards authority because of abuse you see with the authorities. And then the angry protests now, even though many peaceful protesters only want what's right and what's good, the fact of the matter is that there is a larger overflow of anti-police sentiment. So when we're talking about the murder of the policeman over the weekend, one guy posts this, good, kill some more, F them. And then he posts again, two police officers get shot, wow. Then it looks like 100 million black people get killed for being black, really. And then, you know, F you all white folks. This is one guy, okay? This is just one individual. I understand that. But the level of non-sympathetic comments that were being posted, the fact that people in New York, some were actually laughing and saying, well, they deserve it. That is the very climate that I have been drawing attention to and raising concerns about. 866-34-TRUTH. Why am I only allowed to address one side of the issue? Why can't I address both sides of the issue? In my article, Can a White Man Speak to Black Americans? I pointed out that in my article, The George Zimmerman Trial in Black and White, I created a fictional dialogue between a black man and a white man, beginning with the black man saying, quote, "Once again, an African-American is deprived of justice. How many more times must this happen before things change? A black teenager on his way home from the store with Skittles is shot dead by an overzealous community watchdog. A jury with five white women and one Hispanic woman exonerates the killer so he can walk away scot-free. This is 21st century America. This is justice." And then, as the fictional dialogue intensified, the black man urged the white man, quote, to talk to some African-Americans over a cup of coffee. Don't worry, they won't try to mug you or steal your wallet. And ask them to tell you about their world, about corrupt cops and morally bankrupt judges, about parents being beaten in front of their children's eyes without consequence, about the seething frustration black Americans have lived with for decades, no centuries. And then you would understand why we are so outraged today. I understand the issues. No, I haven't lived through them the same way, but I have listened, and it is very easy for me to articulate where someone else is coming from, doing my best to listen and put myself in their shoes. And while I cannot totally put myself in their shoes, and when you totally put yourself in my shoes, I can articulate a position to the point you say, okay, you get it. My first 2 points in my article, Five Obvious Lessons from Ferguson, were number one, the racial divide in America remains wide and deep. And number two, much of white America still doesn't get it, explaining that black Americans have been victims of injustice much more than we, meaning white Americans, realize. And yet when I say, listen, friends, there has been a demonizing of the police and the protests. We've got to be careful and send out another message. And now, tragically, we have evidence of that, either the murder itself or the surrounding hostility to the police among many. Either way, there's been a reason that I've been giving the warnings. Please don't just hear the things I say that you agree with. Hear the things I say you don't agree with, all right? 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, please go to the website. I was very pleasantly surprised when I went to the website myself to see what our team had put together when I was out of the country. 25% off on anything you order from my website. Any books, any DVDs, whole series, large quantities, small quantities, limited time because of limited supplies. But go to Ask Dr. Brown, askdrbrown.org, and you'll see it right on the homepage, the special holiday offer. Take advantage of it. We'll be blessed if you are blessed at this time of the year. Let's go back to Charlotte, North Carolina. Sid, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Hi, Dr. Brown.
Hello.
Hey, hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yeah, my name is Sid, and I'm African-American, and I'm just giving you a call to let you know that I really appreciate you, and I thank you for your stance on this whole issue, and I can attest to the fact that you have been very fair, and everything that you've been saying it with a spirit of love and a spirit of sensitivity for the black community and also for the police officers. And I just wanted to call and tell you that because the previous caller, even though he said he only listened for 15 minutes a week, how could he say what you're not saying if that's all he's listening to? And I just want to call and say that.
Well, Sid, thank you. I value that because that is my heart. Yes. I feel these things so deeply, and so many of you who've called in have really helped further my understanding of things that either my own lifestyle or background, I haven't experienced. So thanks for being part of the community. And you know what I find, Sid, that folks who do get to listen more and more, the more you listen, the more you hear my heart, and the more we really are family. One in Jesus, what unites us is a million times bigger than what divides us. Thank you. That's very meaningful to me. And have a blessed Christmas and New Year. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to the line of fire, 866-34-TRUTH. Joey, grab clip number 9. This, again, is Mayor Rudy Giuliani on Fox and Friends, sharing his thoughts about attitudes towards police nationally and who is behind some of the negative attitudes. Clip number 9.
If you really want to save black lives and you just don't want to hear yourself talk and make some money and be important, then you start talking about the underlying problems and how we solve it. You don't blame it on the police. The police are doing the best job of saving black lives. They saved a lot more black lives than Al Sharpton has ever saved.
Ah, that's quite a bold statement, but I would say one that you can get a lot of data to back. Last comment from Mayor Giuliani, clip number 10.
Every time I've been in the black community wanted more police. Don't listen to these hucksters and these con men who are constantly spewing this anti-police hatred. The biggest demands that I got for more police when I was the mayor of the city of New York were in the black communities. They wanted more police because the black mothers and fathers, like white mothers and fathers, understand it's the police that are keeping their kids alive. And a lot of this does not reflect the community.
Yes, so under no circumstances is there any excuse for police brutality. Under no circumstances is there any excuse for corrupt judges or DAs or anything else. Under no circumstances is there ever an excuse for injustice in the name of justice. And where that exists, it must be confronted. I'll say that yet again. As I wrote in yet another article, I refuse to believe that there is no basis for the grief and anger experienced by many black Americans today. I refuse to believe that all too often they are not victims of injustice. But the fact is, the police are the ones who are fighting against crime. Over the course of a day, they are doing far, 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 far more good to uphold the law than to break the law. They are doing far, far, far more good to keep communities safe. If you live in a dangerous community, regardless of the ethnic background or skin color of those in the community, if you live in a dangerous community, would you rather see more police on the streets or less police? And would you rather teach your children to be respectful towards police than to call them pigs? You see, when you have an atmosphere with so much hostility towards police, let's just say that's the fringe protesters. Let's just say that's the more lawless protesters. Fine. Whatever that is, if you are not constantly sending out a counter message, it's not enough to say that we are stand for nonviolent protests. You must send out a positive message as well. You must thank the officers for the good work that they do. You must request, have a protest and request the presence of police there and say, we honor the authorities, we honor the police, and we are standing against injustice. And let police then be, that puts more pressure on police to live up to the high standards. But I've been saying it. If you don't send that message out, then what you're going to end up with instead is a message of either anarchy and or rebellion and hostility towards police. So I asked athletes to make a pro-police statement. Isn't it tragic that over this weekend, especially some New York teams made pro-police statements, moment of silence for the slain cops or a football player walking into a game wearing an NYPD hat? Isn't it a shame that that's when the messages of solidarity come after two cops are killed, cold-blooded murder? All right, we'll be right back with your calls, 866-34-TRUTH.
We want for fire we please. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
According to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, the police aren't under attack. Institutionalized racism is, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar does say, for those that don't know him, one of the most famous basketball players in our history, he does say that both his father and grandfather were police officers. He does say it's a time to mourn right now and to shut our mouths. He also says at the same time, however, we need to understand that the death of these police officers, that their deaths are in no way related to the massive protests against systemic abuses of the justice system, as symbolized by the recent deaths, also national tragedies of Eric Garner, Akai Gurley, and Michael Brown. Ismail Brinsley, the suicide killer, wasn't an impassioned activist expressing political frustration. He was a troubled man who had shot his girlfriend earlier that same day. He even Instagrams warnings of his violent intentions. I don't go for this at all. I do not go for this at all. Absolutely not. There, you can't separate the murder. Look, that's the thing. Somebody that's unstable gets ticked off. Somebody that's unstable gets ticked off by other factors. It doesn't take that much to do it. To say there's, how can he say there's no connection? And institutionalized, this is not an issue of institutionalized racism. This is an issue of hostility towards police that is increasingly cultivated in the protest movement, and it needs to be checked. It does not mean, look, there are civil rights leaders who are concerned now that everyone's going to step back from the protest and from drawing attention to the deaths of black Americans, et cetera, at the hands of police and alleged injustice. I say alleged because only God knows the situations in each case, although some from the evidence raise serious concerns. But you can continue to draw attention to the issues while cultivating an attitude of respect towards police. I don't believe nationwide that there is institutionalized racism in the police force. I don't believe that. And the reason I'll talk about the cold-blooded murder of the police is because someone walked up to them in broad daylight as they sat in their vehicles and shot them execution style. That's not the case with any of the police cases we're dealing with here. There was either mistaken identity. The grand jury heard enough evidence to side with Officer Wilson in the case with Michael Brown. So here when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar cites this, systemic abuses of the justice system is symbolized by the recent deaths, mentioning my namesake Michael Brown, I don't know that there was any systemic abuse in that. I don't know that there's anything wrong with the justice system there. It certainly seems to be the case with the death of Eric Garner. And I would say 100% sure if that cop had any clue that when he put Eric Garner in a chokehold that it was going to kill him, that he wouldn't have done it. That whole thing is a terrible, tragic mess on every level. But if you just have a cop going up to a black person on the street because that person is a black person, that person's committing no crime whatsoever just because they're black and killing them in cold blood, I don't believe that that person would get away with it. I don't believe that personally. So I do make a distinction. And yet there is definitely reason for serious concern. And definitely some of these cases where we are shocked that there haven't been indictments against the police, at least on some level. But please let us not be guilty of failing to connect the dots. And I hate saying I was warning about this. Now saying here's the reason why. 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Winston-Salem. Dawn, welcome to the Line of Fire.
Thank you. I first of all want to tell you that I have great respect for the policemen and I support them. And then I'd like to tell you that these teenagers today are listening to rock music, and I think that has a lot to do with their attitude towards police.
Yeah,
the words in the rock music, the words in the rock music and the background beat has a lot to do with it. And also, the parents aren't teaching the kids respect for authority anymore.
Yeah, there has been. Look, let's just look at this on a larger level, all right? Let's look at this on a larger level. When I was growing up, the type of songs that, the type of TV that I would watch with my family would be shows like Leave It to Beaver or Father Knows Best or Ozzie and Harriet. So the parents were respected. The kids were subject to authority. When young people watch those shows today, they almost seem silly. They seem cheesy and unreal. If you look at what kids have watched for years and years now, the way kids speak to each other, then the way they speak to their moms and dads, and then the kids are the sharp ones, and the moms and dads are the idiots and the jerks, that certainly contributes to the larger negative view of authority, then all the broken homes that you have throughout our society. And then, yeah, some of the style of music. One of my favorite songs before I was saved was the Who's song My Generation, and that was really a slap in the face of the older generation. We thought the older generation just didn't get it, and there was a whole culture of rebellion that we absolutely cultivated without question. And then, yeah, there are rap lyrics today that absolutely call for killing of cops and things like that. So it makes for just a very volatile situation, one that breeds this type of hostility. And then, to whatever extent cops are guilty of abuses, that furthers the negative attitudes. But there's a much larger cultural issue, Don. You're right in raising it. And thank you for the call. I appreciate it. 866-34-TRUTH. Would it be so hard to regularly send out a message of appreciation to the police? Would it be so hard to regularly recognize the difficult job that they have? Pulled over by a cop the few times they've gotten tickets for speeding, that the cops were somewhat nasty to them? Maybe. I don't know. I've unfortunately been pulled over for those things as well over the years, or something not properly registered or whatever. All my experiences, as much as I hated them, because you hate being pulled over. Was there one where that was pretty crazy. We were out of state, and that was one of those things where you thought, small town, and who knows what in the world this guy is going to do. Yeah, I remember that one. But otherwise, you honor the authority, and that's that. You say, but there are abuses. I'm not denying it. I'm drawing attention to that as well. There are all too many cases at the same time. We need to recognize the Romans 13 principle, especially as followers of Jesus, and say that the law is there for our good, and that we should have an attitude of respect for officers of the law, and where there are abuses, we deal with them. But why can't we send out a positive message of solidarity as well? 866-34-TRUTH. Let's go to Apex, North Carolina. Chris, you're on the line of fire.
What's going on, Mr. Brown?
Hey, man.
I'd like to make a comment. This whole two white police officers getting shot, the black man getting shot. I don't know when you're going to learn or anybody else is going to learn. This is not a black-white thing. It's not a Jew, black, white, yellow, red, anything. It's a spiritual thing. And you can't expect people who are not saved to act like saved people. Okay, that's all I'm going to say. Have a blessed day.
Got it. All right. Thank you for calling in. In other words, we're in a fallen, messed up world. Sinners sin. And that's going to happen. Oh, yeah. Ultimately, this is just ultimately ask for mercy. And of every human being is precious. I've said it in the Middle East conflict, Palestinian or Jew. Every life is precious. Same blood is being shed. The life of a police officer, the life of a black person, a white person, every life is precious. And we continue to have pain and sorrow over these losses of lives. Let us address the issue holistically. Let us address both sides. I could care less if I offend everyone. If I honor the Lord and speak the truth in love, ultimately, you will thank me. We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Back at Line of Fire, 866-34-TRUTH. I just want to read something to you that I read in the first hour. I just want to read it again, then go to the phones. This was posted on my Facebook page over the weekend from Jimmy. Dr. Brown, I am a retired NYPD sergeant who served the city from 1984 to 2004. The NYPD dramatically cut crime from a level of homicides from about 2,300 in 1990 to less than 500 last year. So you think that's 1,800 lives saved in the city in a one-year period. He said this takes active policing. When you have active policing, sometimes things don't always go as planned. The police across the country have millions and millions of interactions every year. With that many interactions, you will have some things go wrong. That does not mean there is a police brutality problem across the country or New York City. I've myself used restraint and personally witnessed great restraint by many officers. There is a demonic movement across this country which are targeting police. They're chanting, what do we want? Dead cops. When do we want them? Now. He said, I feel bad for the citizens of New York City because this will slow down and way up, we will go back to the days of lawlessness in New York City. You reap what you sow. So a question to ask yourself, the moment that you hear, well, as I say, police, do you think, good, thank God for police, they're enforcing the law, we need them? Do you think, oh man, these guys, all these corrupt guys? I wonder what attitude comes to mind. What I have been saying is, along with drawing attention to real issues of justice, we must send out a positive message. It is so tragic that a message of solidarity with police comes out now from New York City teams. 6-3-4-TRUTH. Let's go to Danielle. In hello, are you there? Well,
hello.
I get yes, yes. You're on the air.
Yes, Dr. Brown. I am a retired law enforcement officer from Winston-Salem, and I just want to say that what we need really to heal what's going on in our country as well as in the world is the return to the Bible and what God is trying to say to us and teach us in our daily walk in dealing with all people that we come in contact with in the world. It's a sad state where we are. What's going on now takes me back to the 70s when I just started my law enforcement career, and it saddens me that things are going backward to those times again. And there are two sides to the story. No police officer is perfect, just like there is no man perfect that walks this earth. But basically what we do need is God leading us in our daily lives.
Yeah, obviously, if all of us walked more closely to the Lord and followed biblical principles, the world would look totally, radically different. Let me ask you this. As someone that served in law enforcement over the years, what can police do to cut through some of the negative mentality that exists. Obviously, if you're breaking the law, you don't like the police because they're enforcing the law. But if there are negative stereotypes, if you have a bad apple that makes everyone else look bad, what could police do? What signs of solidarity could they show with those who have concerns about injustice? Do you have any thoughts on that?
I think we have to listen to what people are saying, and I think that's a real problem in communication today, because there are so many methods of communication, and sometimes there is a whole lot of miscommunication. But I think truly what we need to do more of is listen and open up our hearts to see what somebody else may be going through or has lived through. But there is a high standard that's expected of law enforcement, and you have to take a lot. I mean, that's just what is expected,
right,
in that profession.
Yep.
You are expected to stand and not, you know, fight back, strike back, you know, with retaliate with words. And physical restraint is very important in that role.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Well said. I really appreciate the call, and thanks for your years of service. Much appreciated. No, I'm not going to take any more calls, so I don't need to remind you of the number either. What Danelle just said in terms of listening, that's big. That's big. Here I am on talk radio. I get to talk a lot, 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, but I also get to listen. I listen to you as you call. I listen to the interaction. I look for blind spots in my own perspective. If several people call with a similar point, that gets my attention all the more. So rather than immediately going on the defensive, as we often do, or prove our point, or refute the other person, boy, how valuable it is to listen. Yeah, I have a point to make. I write constantly, I speak constantly, but I'm always listening. If we do that, why do you have this position? Why do you see things like this? Why do you feel that way? It makes a massive, massive difference. It really does. And then, yes, police officers, those that are in the public eyes and forces of the law, do have a higher standard. If you saw some bum walking down the street drunk, your heart goes out to that person, a homeless person, and you think, wow, what in the world happened to their life and how can they get back on their feet? But picture if you saw a cop walking down the street drunk or wearing a police uniform. How horrific would that be? Yeah, Proverbs 18:13, good verse, to answer before listening, that is folly and shame. Friends, go to my website, askdrbrown.org, askdrbrown.org, and check out the resource offer. I was amazed when I saw it. Our team came up with it when I was away from now to January 4th. Unlimited, as long as supplies last, 25% off any order you take, large or small, multiple quantities, 25% off. I don't think we've ever done that across the website. Take advantage of that at AskDrBrown.org. My bottom line today, yes, we have burdens, concerns. Yes, there's much we have to say, but please, please stop and listen as well.